Hey everyone, it's Michael. Before we get started, wanted to remind you all to subscribe, like, and follow at Goalkeeper Podcast on all social medias, including YouTube and Twitch, where fully edited vodcasts are housed with exclusive clips. Remember, the more followers we get, the more we can give back to the goalkeeping community. Let's all keep paying that knowledge forward, and on with the show. Welcome to Inside the 18. I'm Michael Magid, live from Hollywood, California. With me, we've got the entire team fresh from Media Day, UCLA goalkeeper coach Saskia Weber. Looking solid. I love it.
Thank you.
that polo, that's some stylish. Is that, I'm guessing that's the new one for this season?
Yeah, we don't. I wore it for the shoot. I'm not a polo girl. I get like, as long as I wear the right color for games, it's fine.
And obviously joining us, guys, fresh from 17 different jobs, whichever goalkeeper coaching job he just came from. You know him as Pro GK Academy, Las Vegas Lights goalkeeper coach, Omar Zini, back in the office. Well, actually, no, back at the home now, not in the office.
Yes, back home. I'm excited though. I'm glad to be here. It's exciting. And is this your second time or third time now? Oh, sorry. You haven't even introduced the panelists. I'm sorry, Mike.
That's okay. We've been chatting about for a while. Guys, making her triumphant return to Inside the 18. We have Sporting Huelva goalkeeper Emily Dolan. Emily, I'm excited. Honestly, it was so much fun with you last year, and to have you back right now, obviously in a new situation now with a different club and everything like that. Why don't we kind of catch up the insiders who might not be familiar with kind of your journey from Real Betis over to Huelva?
Yeah, so this is my second time, Omar, so there you go.
There you go.
So yeah, I just had finished up a 2-year extension off of a 1-year contract that I had originally signed with Real Betis. Decided that I wanted something different, wanted a new challenge, and was lucky enough to find something else in the top division in Huelva. It's actually the team that has been in the top division for the longest amount of time out of all the teams, which is really cool. So new experience. It's only about an hour and a little bit away from the city I was in. So it's going really well. I'm really happy with it.
That's awesome. Because I mean, obviously, you know, one of the things that's always sometimes frustrating with people is that when they move into a new environment and it's not necessarily what they wanted it to be, it sounds like this is literally everything you've wanted.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy. There's definitely an adjustment. There's a lot of things that are just administratively different between the clubs. Huelva is an independently women's club. So we don't have necessarily like the financial backing of like Betis if they have a men's team kind of like supporting them in those ways. So there are unique challenges to playing in a club like this. But to be honest, like the environment's great. Like I'm really happy with the coaching staff, the players. I mean, the city's great. So, I mean, if those are the biggest problems that I have, then I can't really complain that much, to be honest.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's cool that you say that in regards to like, and first off, you know, I love the fact when you were talking about like Huelva, you know, it's kind of one of the founding teams, you know, in that a lot of people are unfamiliar with that, you know, and Omar and Saskia, I mean, I'm sure you guys are aware of this and stuff, but like Barcelona didn't first start. It wasn't that yet. Let all the big clubs, it wasn't kind of the big clubs and stuff. They kind of came on board later on. And, you know, Saskia, you know, we've obviously discussed this at kind of like, you know, when the kind of the original professional league started here in the United States, you know, a lot of those fan bases, you know, they kind of stayed strong and then it kind of moved on to these NWSL clubs. And, you know, it's fantastic kind of seeing that growth.
Yeah. I mean, are you talking about the MLS?
I'm talking about WSA. Yeah. I'm just like saying there was like those old teams that were in the WSA and then they're obviously
old teams, whatever, Mike. No, it's true. No, but it's true. And even especially Washington's a good example of that, you know, with the Washington Spirit, their fan base just, you know, kept going. Boston was there for a while as well. You have Philadelphia, like, well, Philly for the men, but I think New York and stuff. So they were there for the WSA, and then with the NWSL now, they have their new teams, and they just transitioned over and grew bigger. So it's great.
Yeah. You know, and I have a question about that, because like, since that Huelva is kind of like one of these original teams kind of in the pro league over there, is there kind of like more of a rabid supporter base there than maybe some of the clubs that, you know, kind of were later to the game on the women's side?
I'd say the fan base is probably smaller, just because it's not as recognizable of a name and as a brand. But the fan base that is here is incredibly dedicated and loyal to supporting the team, like, through thick and thin. And also the city is small. I mean, in Sevilla, you've got, you know, Via Betis, you've got Sevilla FC, Madrid, you've got a whole host of teams. In Huelva, you've got Recre, which is the men's team, which is independent from us, and then Sporting Huelva. So you definitely kind of get that sense of the whole city's kind of behind you, and people who are familiar with the team definitely have that respect for it as a club that's been really important for women's football in Spain.
It's kind of what's cool about playing in a smaller market. Mm-hmm. You know, having a top team, top tier team in a smaller market, when that's the only, like, it's the main thing in your town or in your city, you get that great deep fan base, you know, really passionate.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny that you said that, because, like, Omar, obviously, you know, Lights is affiliated with LAFC, but they are in Las Vegas, and it seems like you guys draw pretty good there, because you guys are kind of like the only game in town when it comes to, you know, professional soccer.
Yeah, I mean, it's been an interesting connection with the fans. We definitely have, you know, a lot of losses on the record, so it's not ideal. I wish that when we got back to Vegas, and we do play the Galaxy this Friday, so I'm hoping we do draw a big crowd, but it's definitely that disconnect, unfortunately, where we don't get to see them, they don't get to see our training sessions, we just show up for games, and we haven't, you know, put the best product on the field. So I'm hoping on Friday we can, but I mean, again, as a Galaxy fan, and growing up in the, you know, Galaxy Academy, like, since day one, we were able to see that fan base grow. And I actually was able to understand how fans, you know, in growing up in England could, you know, even if their team doesn't move up the, you know, to Premier League, they can stick with their team no matter what. They don't really jump ship. So I think that, to me, the history of all that is so exciting. And that's why I'm hoping that Angel City, for me, at least from the women's side of things, like, I'll feel way more attached to a team than I would for, you know, just, you know, supporting Gotham, because we know Caitlin, stuff like that.
Nice.
Yeah. Woo-hoo! Well, you know, I mean, shout out to Angel City. No, obviously shout out to Angel City. Some big moves this past week. That is for sure.
Right.
Well, Mike and I were at this event a few days ago, and we were speaking to someone who was on the Angel City Women's, like, podcast. And I was like, yeah, you know, I'm excited if Galaxy gets their own women's team. And she was like, no, this is LA's team. This is not LAFC's team. And I was just like, I guess, but it's just so hard for me as the Galaxy supporter to go to the Bank of California and not be enamored with, like, the stadium presence and all that stuff. So for me, I'm just like, I just can't. It's so hard for me to detach the two, but I'm going to have to detach them. I'm going to have to, yeah.
They're just borrowing our stadium when they play.
There we go. That's
it. It was still funny.
It's the Angel City Stadium now. It's not LAFC.
And Saskia, it was so funny, because, like, when she was talking and everything, I was like, yeah, but, like, you know, it's like, it's the color black, and, like, you know, the angel wings and stuff like that. They're like, they don't own that. Like, this is a complete, it's pink. They don't have pink. We have pink. It's a completely different thing. And I was like, oh, okay. No. Well, I definitely, but I see the passion in the Angel City, but I see the passion in the Angel City supporters. And, like, you know, obviously, Emily, you know, with what Omar was saying about, you know, teams kind of sticking through thick and thin, the fan bases and stuff like that. Have you noticed that because you've played the majority of your career in Europe, have you noticed that, like, the fan bases are just, like, really supportive regardless of how the results are going? And in the United States, they might be a little bit more fickle.
Yeah, I mean, supportive, but also incredibly demanding. I feel like with that support, there's also a price. Like, there is an expectation that the team performs a certain way, or at least delivers a certain product. I mean, if the results aren't going your way, that's fine. But if the team's not playing well, or, like, the attitude of the players isn't going well, the fans definitely are really quick to call it out, rightfully, wrongfully, whatever. But it's really just stemming from a passion for that team and that club, regardless of who's wearing the jersey, if that makes sense. And that's been really across the board in all the countries I've played in so far, but especially in Spain.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely seen some some posts and stuff, and they are definitely passionate. That is for sure. Well, speaking of passion,
really quick, think about the passion that the fans had before. We haven't even started yet, and think about the pressure that was put on them when they were rumors came out about coaches and this and that and the other. I'll just say that. I mean, our fan base went crazy, like, and we haven't even fielded a team yet, so. There's a lot of pressure, and especially in a market like for us, in a market like LA, forget it. I don't think if we don't step on the field and win the cup in the first season, like we'll be in trouble, which give us a couple of years, you know, but still there's that pressure.
I mean, like obviously the pressure is going on with LAFC right now, you know, Omar. I mean, like we were talking to the, you know, the supporters, you know, on Monday night, you know, at this event. And they were like, what do you mean you don't show up at 7 a.m. on a Saturday? Like, like I'm like, are you ridiculous? Are you crazy?
Like, do you know me? I don't do anything at 7 a.m.
Oh, God, meeting at 7 a.m. It doesn't happen.
I think that's the double-edged sword, though, right? It's like, one, when you're winning and everything's going well, you have that support from those fans who are going to continue to create that atmosphere that's going to help you. Let's say you're down 1-0 or, you know, you need to close out a game. They're helping you push through. And then on the same level, it's like, again, the double-edged sword of, yes, they're there. However, when you start to lose and those losses compound a little bit more and the product, again, in a big market like LA is not there. I mean, they're playing well. It's just they're not, you know, able to score right now. So, again, the fans, even reading the comments and stuff like that, like the comments are one thing. But when you get to see the people in person, they're still supportive. They're still pushing through. So it's just it's tough. And, again, this weekend's a tough, tough game for them, the El Tráfico. So it's tough for me, even more for me in the office, because I'm just like, crap, I want LAFC to win, but I'm also like, LA is two games in a row we've lost. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Yeah.
We'll be rooting for you, Omar.
I win either way.
You win either way. Yeah, you win. You win.
I know.
Win
that's why I said it.
But yeah.
But before we get to the topic, and by the way, feel free to step in any time whenever you got something you want to say. But what's kind of the biggest rivalry for Huelva? What's your guys' big rivals?
Any team from Andalusia. We don't have the same type of rivalry as like a Sevilla Betis, obviously, because we're the only ones in the city. But basically, anytime we play against Sevilla or Betis, or, you know, even if we play a team from a second division like Malaga or Cordoba, those are looked at as like kind of our derbies, like, because we don't really have anything else. But those games are pretty seriously looked at. Nobody here wants to lose to another Andalusian team. So there you go.
You just brought up a bunch of geography that I don't know anything about, and the way, and I was like,
I'm gonna text you a map right now.
Yes, please do that. Please do that because that is one of the things. I mean, obviously, some people know that I run an international comedy show, and people will do similar to what you just did right there, Emily. Not describing their rivalries for the professional teams that they play for. Not a lot of professional footballers at the shows, but they do bring up different things about the geography and the area and things. And I just go, oh yeah, that's somewhere in Spain, right? Good. Okay, we'll move on. We'll move on from there.
That's the smile and nod technique. You're just like, uh-huh, yeah, yeah, okay,
I thought you just said the Aleutian, and I was like, isn't that like Alaska? So I'm all over the place.
You mean the Aleutian Islands?
Yeah, isn't that like off the coast of Alaska?
No.
It's not? Okay.
I don't think so, no.
I thought that was from the Island of the Blue Dolphins that I read in fourth grade. Am I not remembering that right?
I don't remember. Maybe my geography's off too.
I'm going to close my computer real quick. Hold on.
All right, move on.
All right. Speaking of geography, one of the things that's very difficult for a lot of goalkeepers to handle is the geography outside of the 18-yard box. Today's topic, guys, is decision-making outside of the 18, playing outside the 18. Emily, for maybe some parents who are listening out there or younger players, what do we mean by playing outside of the 18?
So, I mean, I define that as any balls that are dropping into spaces between the goalkeeper and the back line, obviously outside the 18-yard box. Sometimes that ball drops and then, you know, it comes into the 18 because you decide to hold your line. And to me, that's still kind of in the same conversation. But it's learning how to manage the space basically between your defensive line and yourself with regards to offensive threats, either coming, filtering through the midfield, coming down the flanks, over the top, kind of that general idea.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that is, you know, a really great description of that, because like, I think a lot of young goalkeepers, you know, they hear all of that and they go, oh, that just means just coming out and clearing balls, or, you know, or standing at the top of the 18, waving your hand saying like, hey, I'm here if you need me. And, you know, and obviously, you know, Saskia, we know that it's way more complicated than that.
Yeah. I mean, you're there as the last defender. You're there to be played through, depending on the style of play that your team is using. And the space that you're taking up outside of the 18, you know, it should have a bearing on what the other team does. If they see that that space is open, they're going to play into it if you're too deep. If they see that, you know, you can, your range is good, then that changes the type of balls they're going to play in, the type of attack they have. And that's what you want. You want to manipulate the other team. You want to control them by your positioning. And that comes to outside of that of your 18 as well.
No.
By the way, the Aleutian Islands are off Alaska.
They are off Alaska.
Before our like things blew up, like our comment board blew up, they are. Yes. And,
okay. 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 Good. Wow. Good. Okay. Good. Good. I remembered that well. Now all I just need to remember is what city Pippi Longstocking lived in, and I'll be good to go from third and fourth grade literature. Omar, you know, obviously one thing when it comes to playing outside the 18, it's really determines is based on like the scenarios and also like the system that your team's playing, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you break the field up into different thirds, I think when your team is pressing in, I guess your offensive thirds are like, let's say, you know, 3 of 3, we call it, in their offensive third, most likely your position is going to be a little bit higher, but most likely you're not going to influence too much off your line. It's going to be more of ball over the top, and you're going to, you know, create depth to receive a back pass more often than not. Then if it's like second, third, you're going to be a little bit higher, probably like, you know, around the D of the 18. And then that's probably where we're going to try and influence your positioning to, like as Saskia said, they're going to see where you are, what is your range, play ball over the top and see if you come out, do you make a mess of it, do you clear it out? So in those situations, I think in the second, third, you're going to stay at the top of your box to try and influence the play. And then when your team is in their own defensive third, now you're talking about maybe from like the sixth to the PK spot, can we influence any serve balls that are in? And if not, your defenders will drop into that space and clear it out. And I think in that final third defensively, those are where most of the mistakes happen, I feel, where if there's no synergy between you and your back four or your center backs, who, you know, what your range is, what their range is, what their responsibilities are, I think that can cause a lot of trouble. And for me in college, we had guys, two center backs, one was 6'4", one was 6'5". So my coach would always say, hey, I know you want to be aggressive off your line, but these guys will do the job for you. Just let them take care of the most of the heavy lifting in the air. So that gave me, okay, I'm going to lessen my range. So it just depends on who you're playing with.
You know, it's interesting you just said that, Omar, in regards to the 6'4", 6'5", you know, and the size of the players and stuff. Emily, does that kind of, when you're playing, I see that you naturally play very high, and I don't know if that was just necessarily just the Betis style or when you were at Betis, or was that just kind of how you feel comfortable? Because obviously it is fluid how you move.
I've always naturally been an aggressive goalkeeper. So playing off my line has always been something that's been very natural. I think as I've been at the professional level and especially at Betis, I think I've kind of fine-tuned kind of what Omar and Saskia were saying, where you want to find that balance between being aggressive and being reckless. Because of course, the higher levels that you get, if you are too far off your line, you're going to cause a mess of it behind you. And you want to influence the play, but you also don't want to create a mess and you don't want to tip your hand either. So I definitely kind of fine tune that in Betis, but I've always been naturally inclined to play a pretty aggressive line just in general.
Yeah. And I think, and I agree with you so much on what you said, there's reckless and there's aggressive. And I'm sorry, I just keep thinking of Hannah.
are you talking about the recovery play?
The recovery play. And I don't know if you've seen this, and it was top, what, number two on ESPN SportsCenter.
And did you see this?
No, I didn't see it.
If we find it, we'll pull it up. But first of all, she made a mess of it, but it's the recovery that was the great part of it. But again, you also have to understand your back line. And like Omar said, like depending on size or whatever, but you have to not make a mess of things. Allow your defense to defend. You know, and so if you're too aggressive, if you're too reckless off your line, you're taking those defenders their responsibility away, and you're creating chaos. Where if you are calculated about it and you hold, give your defender time to recover, to defend. Don't take up space that you don't need to and make a mess of everything, you know?
Yeah. And I think also too, I think that's the from the coach's perspective, any young kids that are listening to this, I think you need to understand that you're going to make your mistakes with this. It's not, you know, black and white. It's definitely a lot of gray in between where your range is going to be tested. And I call it expensive mistakes versus inexpensive mistakes. And I think we've all been there when we've misread it. And luckily the striker made a meal of it themselves and missed the frame or your defenders were able to cover for you. So you necessarily didn't concede, but also it was an opportunity for you to learn. So I think that's also a big one as well for coaches who are impatient. Let it, you know, be more patient. Let the goalkeepers find their range, and obviously with experience. But young goalkeepers as well, you're going to mess up a lot. You're going to misread a lot. What if you're playing on a field that's dry? It looks like it's coming. That bounce, you know, dries up, and now you're in the middle of nowhere in no man's land. And the striker caught up to it because it died. So I think, again, those are the experiences that you need over time. And as coaches from my side of things as well, and all of our, I mean, Saskia as well, just kind of like, and Mike, who's a coach as well, sorry. But we're all kind of
just well, like, I'm coach adjacent. How about that? Let's go
there. But yeah, and in the pro game as well, I've had to be very like mindful that we do have a game coming in the coming day. So how do I become critical with also the big picture in mind?
Yeah. You know, and I think, you know, one of the really good things that both of you guys brought up right there, you know, and Emma, I want to bring this up with you, is that, you know, it's not about being reckless. And there's a difference, right, Em, between you saying, you know, I feel comfortable playing high, I feel comfortable, you know, being in control. But there's a difference between, you know, confidence and arrogance. And I think, you know, what they were saying in regards to arrogance is you're trying to do more than you should be doing, or you feel that you can control the situation better than your team and you don't trust them.
Yeah, there's definitely, you've got to find a balance, right, of trying to influence the game. And I think any, especially young goalkeepers, want to impact the game, and they want to, you know, you're standing there for 90 minutes and they're looking for every opportunity to mm-hmm. have that impact, but also letting the game come to you. And understanding that it's a partnership. I know it can feel very isolating as a goalkeeper, but you are very much a part of that back line. You're called the last defender for a reason. And those people in front of you have their jobs to do as well. And it has to be a relationship that you build with them. Even, you know, back to what Omar was saying, even building those relationships at the pro level takes time. I mean, I'm in a new team. I'm learning my center backs. I'm learning my outside backs, even my center mids making checking runs through the midfield. It's definitely a process. But just having kind of that mutual respect for the players in front of you and having that understanding and having those conversations outside of games and even outside of trainings to kind of build those relationships and understanding, I think is really important.
Yeah.
I think I saw it when our scrimmage, when I was letting some of the younger goalkeepers play, and some of the keepers don't start very much. We have five, just so if you're wondering.
There's a keeper wars team. The whole keeper wars team.
That's a whole volleyball team, I think.
I know. But the time that they were trying so hard to for their time in to impact the game, they were making the dumbest mistakes. Like whether it's trying to serve a long ball that's just not on and just show that they can hit that ball and bypass, you know, the first line and stuff. And it's just like forcing these issues to be, I'm like, the best way for you to be noticed right now is to do everything simple and like, and kind of like not be noticed. Like, you know, keep it clean, keep it simple, play the right balls. Forcing an issue she can ping that ball. Well, you didn't, you know? And so, and it's obvious to me that you're trying too hard and trying to influence a game where, like you said, let the game come to you.
Yeah.
Again,
go ahead, Omar.
No, again, and like I said earlier, like there's a lot of gray area. And I think a lot of times when the goalkeepers are in good positions to, you know, 1v1s, but let's talk about just balls over the top that are flighted through. like when you take your first step, you want to make sure as well that, okay, after that first step, you've kind of realized, okay, I can come for it. Doesn't mean you have to continue. You can also drop off and be an option for a pass back. And again, from a striker's perspective, if the goalkeeper drops off, now they have to defend the center back or the right back, left back, who's looking for an option. And now they're in a half space, essentially. And that could give your defender a half second to turn and play upfield. So you don't always have to influence the play. And I think that's where the IQ a little bit comes into play from those experiences of like, I know I'm halfway into this, but I could also drop off and give my defender some depth to, you know, one touch clearance, or, you know, show the opposite side of the field for a ball across me to play one touch up the field. So that first step should give you an opportunity to kind of delay and then see what's in front of you. And if you feel like that ball took a good bounce and you can come and attack it and play it out of bounds, or you can keep possession, I think that's I think the next level for me, for any goalkeeper.
And I love what you just said there, right there, Omar. And I think that's one of the issues that a lot of young goalkeepers have, is they're not willing to be patient when they're outside of the 18 because they kind of feel like rushed and not recognizing how much time they actually do have in a lot of these scenarios.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely struggled with that early on in my professional career. I mean, I would get to a lot of things, but it was just one-time clearances all the time. And that's fine. I mean, it's a safe option. But I think that's where really being confident with your feet and training your first touch, just to have that confidence on the ball and understand that you do oftentimes have more time than you think. And being able to scan your defenders and also knowing the system that you're playing, right? And knowing your defenders, what options they're going to give you, what spaces they like to check into, what naturally, you know, your body position as you're coming up to a ball, what options reasonably are you going to have when you get there? And then looking to see if anybody's there and processing that information at a quicker rate. And that's trial and error again. And I think the most important thing when we're talking about this is kind of admitting that confidence and security with whatever decision you decide to make, that you are giving off that security and assuredness to everybody on the field. And that kind of sets the tone for the rest of the balls that are going to be played into that space for the rest of the game, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, that makes complete sense, because I think this is a conversation we've even had before, Saskia, is that like, if a goalkeeper early on in the game makes a simple, clean decision from a distribution standpoint, that gives a certain mindset to the other team, like, oh, we can't press this goalkeeper like we thought we could. This goalkeeper is very confident. They understand their role in this system.
No, absolutely. I mean, I even as a coach, I'll watch the other goalkeepers' warmups to see how their touches are on the ball with distribution and everything. And I'll say to our forwards, I'll be like, if we're high pressing, press the keeper, force them to put the ball back to the keeper, make her play with her feet. You know, cause if she does mess up once or twice, now it's in her head. But if you do on the opposite of that, if you're nice and clean, simple and everything, the other team notices that. They're like, all right, well, maybe the press on the goalkeeper's not on because she seems pretty solid with her feet. So they might drop off.
I know this may sound irrational. At some moment, what a segue.
Hold on. No, the most unorthodox out of left field thing's going to come out of Omar's mouth now.
It's not bad. I just don't want it to seem like it's unrealistic. But there are certain times too where there are passbacks, and my goalkeepers that I've worked with in the past, they just kick the ball upfield. And how I'm said, it's like when you kind of see a goalkeeper do that, you in your mind kind of go, okay, they're panicking. They're just going to play a ball upfield, and we can reset our back four and then start playing. But if you're present, which is a challenge that I've had I've offered to my goalkeeper that I'm working with at the Lights, is like, be extremely present in the situation. When that center back has a lot of time on the ball, most likely they're going to try and ding the ball over the top if we have a high line. Okay, so when they play that ball over the top, where are we pressing from? Probably the left side, right? Okay, so if they play it over the top and you're showing depth and it's a one-touch clearance, anybody can play kickball. Anybody can get a one-touch clearance and boot it up the field. But can you, in those moments where the center back was about to play over the top, take a quick picture and examine where our pieces are on the field, where you're that one-touch clearance or a two-touch clearance can be directed in a position. And we had this pass 2 weeks ago against San Diego. Tough result in the end, but there's one moment where it's a pass back. He took two touches, moved with the ball, played it over the top to the corner, and now our striker was in, and their defender had to headed out of bounds for a throw-in in their defensive third, in our offensive third now. So it's like anybody can play the ball big, but can we start taking in, pictures and be not a pessimist, but be proactive about the situation and start directing passes into good areas? And I think that's where, again, you're present versus passive.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like, you have to see where your numbers are. Like, if we, you know, who's up there, if you can take a touch, two touches and knock it over the top with purpose, 100%. I agree with you. Anybody can just like boot it, like back and forth. But there's got at the pro level, at the level, like at the level we're playing out in college, there has to be purpose to that clearance.
Exactly.
You know, but I get it. There are some clearances you got to put in the stand. I mean, I get that.
Sure.
But if you have that time, like you said, Emily, like, you know, if you have more time than you think, that's got to be hit with some purpose.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times. Go ahead, Omar.
I'm so sorry, Mike. But no, just again, okay. If I was trying to paint a picture, if ball comes over the top, our left back is, you know, running onto it and you're showing at the end line. I say all the time, like, take a directive touch or like a moving touch so you can go to the opposite side. So if they're playing you the ball, that moving touch needs to be deliberate. Like, you need to know exactly where you're taking this touch because you've scanned the field. Mm-hmm. And now that touch, obviously, if it's good, you watch Ederson. I mean, it's kind of a tougher example because he has so much respect now. So it's not like in the early days. But he takes a perfect touch, and now he freezes everybody because he can pick out where he wants to go. And if he doesn't want to go big, he can show big and then show short. He can show short, then go big. And I think, in my opinion, most goalkeepers, if you just train it and practice it enough, you'll have that capacity with that first touch. And now, because of the pictures you've seen, now you can start picking your passes where you want to go. I think, again, that's the next level thing. And in college as well, there's going to be opportunities where you can play big. But if we can keep it, and I'm sure at a school like UCLA, where, like, you guys probably, you know, run most teams off the field with the quality side of things, I think keeping the ball away from a lack of a quality with quality is better.
You know, it's interesting what you guys were saying right there, because I was just thinking about this, Em, with you and watching, you know, some of your work on Y-Scout recently, is that, you know, you can, with your starting position, you can essentially manipulate the other team into playing into areas where you feel comfortable and your team's going to be successful. Is that something that's intentional for you, or is that something that just happens naturally and organically through the game?
A little bit of both. I mean, I've watched a lot of football. I've always been really drawn to just that style. And I've trained that a lot, but also it is intentional with regards to the system that we're playing. Because I can direct all I want, and, you know, I can buy myself all the time in the world. Like what Omar was saying, you can buy yourself time with a good first touch. You can buy yourself time with good positioning and putting yourself into good spaces to, like, separate yourself and give yourself room to kind of scan and assess the field. But if the rest of your team is not on that same page and those options don't appear, then it's the same result as if I just run out and kick the ball long regardless. So every team I've been on, it's definitely a conversation. Most teams that I go to know that that's the style that I like to play. And that's, I mean, they bring me in because they understand that that's how I play, because it is a little bit different. but it is a conversation that we have to have. And it's always like a bit of a process to kind of get everybody on the same page.
Yeah, you know, and I think, you know, having that conversation, you know, that is really, really important, because, again, if you're, like you were talking about, you know, before, if, like, if your outside backs don't know that this is how you want to play, or your center backs don't know how this is you want to play, you know, it's going to be all over the place. You know, Suski, obviously this is an issue, and this is the reason why there is a preseason, but when you have younger goalkeepers, you know, who don't get necessarily the reps and things like that, you know, it's they're going to be stuck a lot of times in situations where, you know, they're trying to play a certain way, but that's not the way that the team wants to play, right?
Yeah, I mean, always. It takes time, you know. That's why we have five keepers. We're grooming them. By the time they take over, they get it.
but like, you know, we were talking about, you know, obviously, you know, if you make these mistakes in these areas and stuff like that, you know, the recovery is so, so, so important. You know, obviously, you know, Suski, you were talking about just recently, you know, a play that ended up that was from a mistake which wasn't followed with a second mistake. Like you always say, never follow one mistake with another mistake. And it was an incredible recovery run back to make that save. And if you guys don't know what we're talking about, it's literally all over ESPN. It's everywhere. But how important is it that we don't get that, Suski, that deer in the headlights situation, because I think that's what happens a lot of times to young goalkeepers. They miss clear a ball or whatever, and they just stand.
And then, well, you know, what was really amazing is our captain, one of our captains, Marley, said in our meeting, talking about it, saying, you know, we were up 3-0, and she felt that a lot of other people in that situation probably would have froze. You know, they screwed that up. The ball, they were at, you know, she was out of the box. The ball bounces through and you're like, shit, you know, I shouldn't have done that. And you see the player hit the ball towards the goal and you would have stopped and you're up 3-0, you know, no. And so there was no deer in headlights. It was she's probably going to go out for UCL track and be a sprinter at this point. I think it was written somewhere in like one of the UCLA things that it was just like Hannah Mitchell, like the fastest, like 20 yards in UCLA history, like whatever. But you know, you're exactly right. And so that would have been a second mistake, would be deer in headlights. And she didn't. She had an amazing recovery, and it was an amazing second save. But, you know, that's what I mean by don't follow one mistake by another. Watch.
Look at this run. Look at that run.
Why is she a goalkeeper? I could never run that fast.
That's literally the fastest goalkeeper I've ever seen.
You see that explosion was crazy. I was like, because she was like, somebody posted on my page like, oh, crap, I'm not going to screw this up for any team. Yeah, so that's in what we're talking about. That's a horrible decision coming out, right? So you had a defender there. You had two defenders there. So you created chaos in a situation that if you had held – quite possibly your defense would have figured it out. But adding yourself into the mix outside of the box there was a huge mistake. The recovery was epic, obviously. Why is she? I got to tell her that one on Friday. Why is she a goalkeeper?
Put her as a winger. Like, come on.
I mean, I'm not gonna lie, like shout out to like the strength and conditioning department at UCLA, because like that was the quickest first step by a goalkeeper. And the acceleration on that was just like next level. I mean, like, you know,
and Omar, no, we were up 3-0 and dominating the game. So, you know, we use it as an opportunity to give our second string some play. And she had actually a great game. Like other than this, she had a great scrimmage the week before and really earned it. And like, it's very rare that we get the chance to get that, you know, that player time. And so she made the most of it on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Omar.
No, I think again, I think in college, cause it's such a short season. It's like, sometimes it's just experience obviously matters, but it's from the coaching staff as well. It's just, whoever has the hot hand and whoever can show consistency. I think obviously in any sport, but I think with goalkeeping specifically in the college season, sometimes it's from the get-go, it's an open competition. And then that goalkeeper, obviously from their sophomore, they go to junior year, and then like all they have to show is their consistency. But I think that's the biggest thing, is just when you get your opportunity, don't show, you know, you don't have to show crazy moments. It's just making sure that you're consistent. There's peace of mind with the coaching staff, and you do all the little things, these little moments, right. And if you don't, how do you make up for those mistakes, or how do you make up for those errors? And I think, yeah. I mean, I don't know if she'll be the starter this year, Sauce. I mean, I don't want to here, but.
No. We've already started playing. Lauren, that was a regular season game. Lauren's our starter, but you know.
And she's a Herman Trophy watch list.
But Hannah, and who's playing great as well. But Hannah worked her way up for this, and she wasn't number two last year. And, you know, she's worked her way into the number two position. And I looked her dead in the face. I said, well, don't be satisfied with number two. You know, just keep pushing Lauren, because that's what's made you great. Before that, you were pushing, you know, Adalia and Kelly and stuff. And now, now you're pushing and you're doing great. Keep it up. But we could talk about my keepers. Lauren came up with some huge saves in our game against Fullerton the other day, which by the way was in front of 8,000 people, which was pretty sick. So they're doing it. I'm proud of them.
I want to bring this up right now. I want to bring up some of these scenarios of Emily's right here, and let's see if we can. Whoops, Let's see here. So I want to play this first one right here. And Em, if you can help out like with the audience and stuff like that too, because I believe this is Betis versus Sevilla, right? So this is a big rivalry match that's going on right here, right? And this is in the 34th second. Basically, I think what happens is ball's played into midfield. It's headed back into your area. And then there's a Betis player is covered on as a charging Sevilla player is coming on right here. So you kind of come out and you kind of shield the player away and play it out of danger far enough so that it's kind of out of danger. But there's that recovery. And it's hard to see it right here on camera because like they stream away or whatever. But this is that immediate recovery that we're kind of talking about right here. So let's kind of play it in real time again so that everyone can kind of see who's watching. Played out, and then that's the recovery. Boom, just to make sure you don't get chip type of there. So can you kind of walk us through what was going on right here?
Yeah, that to me, looking at that, I don't know if you guys are watching my face during that, but I'm definitely cringing.
were you watching mine?
I was really trying not to look at anything, to be honest. I don't want to look at anything. So that game, that context for that game, this is not a defense, but yeah, that's our derby. That's against Sevilla. We are playing in Villamarín, which is our men's team stadium. That was, I think, like 20,000 people. Our starter at that point, I didn't think I was going to play. Our starter the night before, like they decided the medical team that she couldn't play. And that is the deer in headlights, definitely nervy moment. Hindsight, don't come for that. My defender's gonna reach that ball, and it's a simple pass back. And then yeah. I've got plenty of time to figure it out from there. Or, okay, if I'm gonna come out, that clearance has to be much better than that. Because at that point, when I reach the ball, I don't have any other options. My two center backs are way too close to the ball. They don't have time to open up. My two outside defenders don't have time to give an option. The only thing left for me to do is kick the ball long. And really, that's just not simple football. Sometimes football is the best when it's just simply being played and not trying to force something that just really shouldn't happen.
No, and I agree. Well, I mean, this is a good example of give your defender the chance to defend, in a sense. Like, that's a pass back, you know? Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think if you would have cleared that any other direction, it would have been in the back of your net because you would have cleared it right into the red player. But so kudos on that one. But I agree, you know, and it's good to be able to be – I like the aggression, but, you know, I agree with you. I think it could have been a pass back.
I mean, I was kind of trying to talk more about like, you know, don't follow one mistake with a second mistake. And I was trying to show that little recovery,
Here,
but everyone,
it was
everyone,
not as fast as the other girls. It was not that fast.
She's never coming on the show again. Great clip, Mike. Awesome.
We have other ones.
That run back is me knowing very well that I have messed up and I need, if I get scored off of this, they should pull me and just that's it. Like, that's what that run back is.
Oh, it's a common theme. Mike puts up clips sometimes and he like stretches it as much as he can to try to get something out of it. And then usually the person who's in it's like, didn't see it that same way, but okay.
Why'd you pick that one?
Come on, Mike, put up another one.
Okay, I'll put up another one. Go on, while I'm putting
no,
up
no, but
one.
I think again, just like again, we're doing it with panelists. But if you're a player and you're watching your own clips, it's super important. Even if it's a goalkeeper coach just by yourself, when you watch these clips, you're like, okay, that situation is 50-50. I probably could have done a better job with this clearance or try to keep possession with the clearance, but I'd much rather stay back. It's not in my best interest to come out for that again. So now the next situation where you're kind of like 50-50, that mental recall, whether people like believe it or not, it happens so quickly. And in that half second when you decide I'm not going to go, now you're comfortable with the decision. And then we talk about taking those pictures from earlier. And now when you receive a pass, are you taking a big mm-hmm. touch to the left side because that's where the area is open? Or are you getting a one-touch clearance up? Again, there's so many different like levels to it, but I think watching your own film and realizing, crap, I could have done something different, helps you so much in the future.
Okay, so I'm gonna try again. And I'm gonna see how Emily feels about this one.
I'm like holding my breath.
This is the 50th.
You.
good point.
Now, to be fair, we're friends, so I'm not as freaked out because I think Emily under, Understood. Okay. Fine. I'm still freaked out. I still feel bad. I don't expect the same high standard that you guys do in goalkeeping. And so I was like, that's a great play. If I did that, I'd feel great. But anyway, everyone's like, oh, that's why you don't play for us. So 55th minute, this Batiste versus, Real off with versus Rayo. This is played back to Emily from short. She recognizes the pressure on her and that the passing lane is not open. So she shields the ball and with one touch finds the open player and remains in a good holding position. So, oh, nope, that was not. Was that the one? Yeah, that is the one. Yeah.
So you rehearsed that or what, dude? I feel like that was a very.
That was very... like, are you reading off a prompter?
Yeah. In the private chat. Don't you guys know? See, you guys have the notes too. You guys don't have the notes? Oh. They're right there in the private chat.
Giving away
the secret right here. So anyway, walk us through this one, Emily, right here.
Yeah, so this one a little more comfortable. Definitely kind of got a better read. Also, I think my start position could have been higher. Definitely that's something that I improved on a lot that year. That was my first year at Betis, if I'm not mistaken. And if my line is higher, I definitely get there more comfortably. But recognizing that pressure coming down, I mean, my left is going to get there late. It does give time for my central defender to pick her head up. We've got a nice split and we're out the other side. So I think in that moment, a little bit calmer, just better decision-making, not rushing, not forcing anything. And good communication also with the other center back, knowing that, you know, she just has to kind of put off the oncoming attacker enough for me to get a touch in. So that one's better, Mike. Thank you. A little better. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so each one's slowly improving. So by the end, we're going to have Susie's wonderful plays going on.
Then that one, I still see some problems, but it's a little better.
the funniest thing about this.
We're all our worst critics.
To break the fourth wall, M literally sent me 5 minutes of highlights. And I was like, and instead I'm like, no, confidence versus arrogance. I'm like, I can do better. I can find some better stuff on Y Scout. So I go and do that. Omar, you got to help me out here, man. I need the pro GKI when it comes to this on the breakdown.
If it's not there, don't force it. That's all I'm going to say. If the clip isn't there, it's better to have a discussion on a generic clip than trying to force a clip. That's my 2 cents.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Anything anybody else wants to add to this before we move on? Okay. All right. We'll move on from this play right here then. So this is the 67th minute. Basically what happens is the ball is swung back to Emily at the top of the 18. She takes a prep touch forward, being comfortable to go outside the 18. And I think that's something that we want to definitely discuss after we look at this. This is creating space for the line, which plays the ball up to the outside back. Then you stay in a good holding supporting position high, and the ball's played back to you, allowing you to build and swing the ball out to the opposite side in possession. So here comes the ball. Boom, you prep touch, coming high, plays the ball out. Actually, no, that was the wrong clip. God darn it.
I thought, man.
I had these. This is all over the place. What is going on today, guys? All right, fine, Emily, walk us through this one. You were there.
That one definitely more simple. Looking back, I would still probably be a little bit higher start position. And I probably would play that ball first time. I wouldn't take that touch because that touch gives that on coming forward to kind of close the space on my other center back. Looking at the structure of the attacking team, I mean, that forward's pretty isolated. My center back that I'm playing to right now always has me, and we go out the other side if she feels there's pressure. So I don't know, I think especially in that team and my team now as well, I mean, I'm pretty comfortable in tight spaces. My defenders are typically comfortable in tight spaces and pressure. I'm not sure, you know, ideally speaking, I'd like to take that touch a little wider, and even that outside back to my right comes and gets that ball instead. Again, it's creating space and time for the player that you're passing the ball to. I can give the ball to somebody and it's not like I wipe my hands and it's like, oh, well, I'm done. If they lose the ball, then like, it's not on me. Like, their next pass to me personally is also my responsibility, that they're set up for success for the next action in the play. So not bad, but I would still probably play that one time and create more space to just help my defender a little bit more.
So we've gone like first clips, like a D, then like a C, and then like a B. Like, so am I going up? Am I escalating on the clips here?
You went from a D to like a C to a C plus. Well, in your defense, these are all clips from my first year in Betis. And really that first year was me working through a lot of those little details. So, I'm going to look at these clips with a little bit more of a critical eye than probably I would have if you had shown me this 2 years ago. I would have been like, oh, yeah, that's much better than what I was doing in Poland. But, like, now I look at it and, like, there's some stuff to clean up.
Oh, okay, so this is the clip that I wanted to talk about right here. And I feel you, because that's the way I look at, like, old comedy sets of mine. When people watch them, they're like, oh, this is actually really good. I'm like, no, that's terrible. Please don't ever show that to anybody before. I can't believe I used to do that joke. That's terrible. So this is the clip I really wanted to show was this one right here. And this is what I was talking about with you actually coming outside the 18, more comfortable. Boom. You're drawing that player in right there, allowing that passing angle to be open, then they can, you stay high, you can play the ball back, boom, 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 like that. So is that a little bit better?
Yeah, that's better. Because you do, I mean, for me personally, I do want to have that comfortability on the ball. And I think it's important to kind of have that confidence to bring the pressure to you. Obviously, understanding there's a balance there. You don't want to get your pocket picked. But if that forward comes and closes that space, that means there's more space somewhere else in the field, and conceptually having a picture in your head of what's happening to the space on the field that you're not directly looking at, I think is really, really important when we're talking about playing out of the back and playing in that space outside the 18 with your defenders.
See, I love what happened right here, and I don't know how everybody else feels about it, but just the simple fact is that when you allowed that pressure to kind of come into you, you played the ball quickly, simply, but by doing that, that chaser drew to your player on the ball, which opened up that space again for you. Now you have plenty of space to play that ball back.
Yeah, I mean, there's no, you know, for forwards, they can't, I mean, the majority of forwards, I will say, can't do, you know, suicide sprints for 90 minutes. A lot of those times, those simple pass backs can create new options and new lanes. You know, even if you're playing a ball to somebody, knowing very well you're going to receive the ball back and understanding you need to hold that position and show again, because they're not going to be able to turn out of that pressure. That means that the space is created somewhere else.
Yeah, no, that's a great point.
This is why goalkeepers always need to participate in rondos. Like, you Absolutely. Need to understand spacing. Yeah. You need to understand who you mm-hmm. play the ball to. Where's the open space? What are they doing with it? Are you setting them up for a one touch or a two touch? Mm-hmm. Where's your movement after you play them? That is why you have to play rondos as often as you can.
Agreed.
Yep.
But yep. Even just the way you were breaking that down again, like, I know I'm a very impatient person, so I kind of want everybody to speak it the way, or like say it the way you did. But I think, again, analyzing and being, like you said, with a critical eye is super important. And again, you have to audit yourself as often as possible. Obviously, the proper timing, like if you're in the middle of the season, it's probably not best to like criticize yourself every single time. But it's important to take that critical eye and say, OK, what could I have done better? What would the opposing team, like, what were they forcing me to my right foot, to my left foot? Where was the space? And then now when you get those pictures and you kind of critique yourself, the next time you're out there, you can really, really play with a little bit more freedom because you have options now.
Yeah. I want to kind of put this up right now here, because we've kind of been talking about, you know, the decision making and, you know, how about having patience, but also you need to also recognize when you have to play a simple clearance. So I kind of want to play this ball right now, right here. This is in the 42nd minute. It's a Betis versus Rayo. The ball's played over the top by Rayo from the midfield.
Just play it. Okay.
Simple touch with confidence into space right there. So can I walk through it now, or should I let Emily walk through it?
Let Emily walk through it.
Okay.
I love reading a screenplay, but watching someone else read one, I don't know. I just something about it.
I was trying to be prepared.
This is not an audition.
Omar was like, we have to give people context so that they can go back if they're listening to the audio and find the clips themselves, you know, so on Y Scout or YouTube.
Tell them what game. Yeah.
Okay, just the game.
What you did.
Okay.
All right, go ahead. Do it.
All right, go ahead, Emily.
So the ball's played over the top. No. yeah, that ball's played over. Specifically in that system, I mean, that's a situation where we've talked about that ball before. And my outside back is tracking back, knowing that I'm looking for her in that pocket. And later on in that clip, you kind of see our center mid and that center back, I guess my left center back, kind of triangulating around that situation, and we end up playing out. So to me, I always want to keep possession if it's possible. So I've definitely, in the beginning, I was too aggressively trying to keep possession. After I, you know, was playing everything long and then I swung so far the other way. But again, like that's something that you talk about, you know, with your team or whatever, playing that into a good space. I'd probably try to play that on the ground if possible, like try to make that touch a little bit cleaner for her. But you know, not awful.
Jeez, you guys have the higher standards in the world. I am feeling awful about all these clips that I've chose. I think I need to lose that. Well, to be fair, Emily, you did have the injury, so it was difficult to find some more recent footage.
Can I go ahead, Omar? Really quickly?
Absolutely. Please save me.
Okay. So this is our goalkeeper. We had a conversation about this, and it's like finding your space. He usually does a really good job of it, but this one, let me just pull it up here.
What a debacle that was.
This is again in the conversation, like right away I went up to our backup goalkeeper and I said, in these situations you need to find space. So if you're in the same line where the striker doesn't have to do any extra work but just continue their run, you are doing a disservice to your center back. So I told him, like, you need to find the space, even if you show all the way like out in this side, on the right side, where this huge Jaritos banner is, like showing this corner. Now the striker has to take like a J or like an L run to try and get to you. And it gives you time to just play it out of bounds. But instead, now you have no space to clear this ball.
And the direct line of the, yeah.
Exactly. So something like that as well, where through experience, now it's an inexpensive mistake because he didn't get scored on. But the teams will capitalize on that. And if you want to play at the next level, those are the conversations that you have to have for yourself. It's like, did I put myself in a good position or a bad position to be exposed at a higher level?
Right.
I don't know. Again, that's our center back. I think he was just tired. It was a rough one. But, yeah.
Is this anyways, the same play?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're showing a replay of it.
Just the worst. Just the worst. Talk about that.
I thought it happened more than once in the game.
Now I don't feel so bad about the clips I chose of Emily. So it was like, if Alex ever came on the show, is that what you're going to show Alex? Jeez.
Yeah. But those are the conversations. Like even today, he was like, yeah, I feel like I've gotten better at my, you know, bypassing the left center back and going to the left winger. And like 2 minutes later, there was a ball that didn't need to be played. And he tried to play it. And we lost possession of it. And they countered us. And they didn't score, but they countered. And I'm like, dude, I love that you have confidence in your passing. I love that you want to do that. But anybody can hit a pass when there's no pressure on them. Do you know when you're going to hit it? Do you know if we're trying to go forward with that pass? Are you playing the defender's back foot? Like, what are we doing here? So I think, again, anybody can play a ball into space or into a striker with no pressure. But it's about when you do it and understanding the context.
Go ahead, Em.
No, I mean, I would even add on. I mean, that's what film is for. I mean, I'm giving you a hard time at the clips, but to be honest, it doesn't bother me because in contexts like those, it's really hard to analyze what could have been better, what you maybe should have looked at that you missed without seeing that game footage. And that's how personally I've learned, is making those mistakes in a game, whether they're expensive or inexpensive, as Omar put it. And then taking that information and making better decisions the next time. I mean, to me, the most valuable way to grow, like in any aspect really of goalkeeping, but especially in this one, where there's so many moving pieces and every situation is so specific and individual, that, I mean, I think talking about mistakes, honestly, is probably more constructive than looking at the times that you did it well.
Right. Yeah. Well, Saskia, a question for you.
Yeah.
In the college game too, when you have obviously a larger roster and you have, you know, four goalkeepers that aren't playing, how often are you, whether it's film or during the game, kind of like grouping them together and saying, look, you're not the one in there, but this is a mistake you can learn from?
I always talk to them. I'm like, probably all the players on the bench at this point know how to solve certain situations. No, but I'll go up to Hannah, I'll pull Hannah over or E or whoever, and I'll be like, what would you like in this situation? This is what should have been done. I do it in practice as well. And like, I'll be, even if I'm behind, like today when we were doing small sided and I'm behind, I was across from Lauren's goal, and I think Hannah was in goal opposite of her, but Lauren made a mistake. And I was like, that is what I'm talking about in this situation, you know, even though it wasn't Hannah's mistake, it was Lauren's, but she's watching it, you know? So this is what I'm referring to when we're talking about, you know, stealing space, but staying big and like, you know, so on and so forth. So I'm constantly pointing it out.
I think, you know, one thing that's also, you know, really important.
And we do video every day. So whether it's full team video and everything, so.
Yeah. And I think it's just in regards to the video analysis of situations like this and why it is, I think, sometimes more difficult to find clips for this type of activity or these types of scenarios is because they are very subjective, you know, to what's going on in the game. Like, I mean, finding final action scenarios, you know, and breaking those down, I mean, is much more simplistic than when you're talking about the complexity of how you want to play, where you want to play the ball, what's going on in this situation, yada, yada. So, guys, just give me a little bit of slack, please. Please, a little bit of slack. we'll start wrapping up in a second because I think it's almost midnight for I think it is midnight. It's midnight, right?
It's after midnight.
It's a little bit after midnight. It's okay.
See, Mike's trying to redeem himself.
there's nothing to redeem.
I'm kidding. To redeem. Mike.
You're good.
Okay.
Mike, you're great.
Okay.
You know that.
I mean, but I think also that just the fact, Emily, is that you're being so critical and still talking about how like, yeah, that was my first year at Batiste and didn't think for those people out there, just to understand some context. I mean, you've played in the Champions League against some of the best teams in the world. I mean, you know, you've played in one of the best leagues in the world for years and years and years. And still, you know, with all this kind of veteran time, you know, playing at the professional level, you're still that critical of your game. And that's why you're playing at the level that you're at right now. And I think a lot of young goalkeepers need to hear that. Because I think they start thinking like, oh, when you get to a certain point, there's nothing to break down anymore. You know, you know what you're doing and you figure it out. But it's a fluid process, right?
Yeah, absolutely. My mom, who has never played football in her life, but I stand by one of the most talented just general coaches that I've ever met. You know, coached basketball, coached all these things. And she would always tell me the moment you think that you know everything about everything, stick a fork in you, you're done. And, you know, any sport, anything you do, honestly, in life, to get a little metaphysical, but goalkeeping specifically, it's so complex and there's so many different facets and there's so many challenges in it that if you're not looking at all of the mistakes and being critical of yourself, then you're not going to grow. And that makes it hard to stay at the higher levels. Yeah. Like, it's easier to get to the higher levels than it is to stay there and stay competitive. And so I think that it's something really important to not be self-deprecating. You know, you can have confidence in yourself while also recognizing, hey, that should have been done better. And then actively working towards improving it until that becomes one of your strengths and you find something else that could improve. And then you start working on that. It's just a never ending process.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. Well guys, we'll start wrapping it up. Hold on. There's a comment right here that somebody wanted to put in and oh, here it is right here. This is a very high level comment.
Love you, Mom.
That's awesome. Yeah,
oh, they're great.
You gotta love that.
Oh boy,
love her.
Oh boy. Well, as we start wrapping, Emma, do you have any advice for any young goalkeepers that that feel uncomfortable playing outside the 18? Because there's a lot of young kids out there that really are scared to play outside the 18, and they really run back and hide inside that 18-yard box.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that anxiety is normal. I think that it can be incredibly uncomfortable in the first, you know, couple of years, honestly, that you're experimenting with it. but really take advantage of every opportunity as that you're playing to kind of make a decision as an opportunity to learn, whether you do it well or poorly. And I'm a very big advocate of you learn by doing. So if you always run back into your net and you play passively, then you're never going to learn those skills unless you put yourself out there to make those mistakes and learn from them. So stay brave in your development, stay committed to developing into that type of goalkeeper that you want to be, and not letting that fear of making a mistake or judgment from your teammates or your coaches kind of hinder that passion to kind of improve.
Anything anybody else wants to add on to that?
I think it was said perfectly.
Yeah.
Yes. I'll add one more thing. I'm sorry.
Okay. He's got another clip.
No more clips. But I think, again, we talk about with young kids who are, you know, if you're having an opportunity in high school, let's say, and the coach is saying, hey, we're not going to play you on varsity, but JV is an option, or playing with the freshman team is an option. Get the minutes you need, because as Em said, like, the only way you're going to be able to actually improve on these situations is to see them over and over and over again. And I see far too many people, for example, we have some academy guys that train with us and they don't know how to deal with crosses. And they're really good shot stoppers, decent with their feet. And I'm like, well, I mean, where do you think the game is in the MLS if that's the trajectory you want? A lot of balls surge into the box. And if you can't read it, then what's going on? So it's like, whose fault is that? Probably the goalkeeper coaches who's working there before. It's like they didn't get enough of those reps. They didn't get enough balance. Mm-hmm. So you have to, again, as coaches and as players, find opportunities where you get those reps. And if you can get those reps on a lower level team, then you have to prove yourself there and get a lot of reps. And then by the time you get the experience and the opportunity to play for the first team or the varsity team, you're actually making an impact versus, oh, hey, you have this that's wrong. You have this that's wrong. Iron all that stuff out before. And to do that, you need minutes.
Yeah.
Omar Zini, motivational speaker and life coach to the youngins.
No.
Out there. Well, Em, thanks again for staying up to past midnight. I mean, we were excited to have you back on, and I'm glad that Saskia was able to join us this time, because I know she wasn't able to join us last year. It was a lot of fun. Where's the best place for people to connect with you on social media? I know you're pretty active there, and shout out to all, honestly, so to Welva of those, some of the awesome pictures from the training sessions lately. We're going to share, I think, one of them in a few minutes, but some really, really good ones. I love it.
Yeah. So my handle on all social media is the same. It's EmilyGK19. I'm open to chatting about goalkeeping, chatting about my process with football, with anything. Anybody who knows a little bit about my story knows that I've got coming back from injuries. So I'm always open to chatting with just about anybody. And no, thank you so much for having me again. Like, I really enjoyed talking with you guys. And yeah, I'm super glad, Saskia, that you could be with us this time, because we missed you last time.
Absolutely. And I'm glad your mom's on.
Oh my God. Me too. I miss her.
that's awesome.
And do you want to plug your poetry?
Well, okay. So I write poetry. I do write poetry. I've got some upcoming publications coming up that I'm going to be putting out on my social media. So if there's any goalkeeper/literary fans out there, give me a follow, because I do both.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you gotta have the outside interest, guys. You gotta have the balance, as we always talk about. And speaking of a man who's very balanced, he's got the balance of college goalkeeping, professional goalkeeping, amateur goalkeeping. So it's a very balanced schedule for Omar Zini. You can reach out to him at ProGKAcademy_ on Instagram, as we all know. And you can reach out to Saskia Weber at Saskia_Weber. You can be following everything that's going on with the UCLA seasons, because she's very active on posting all the results going on at UCLA. So that's always good. And guys, if you have a guest suggestion or topic suggestion, contact at InsideThe18Media.com or at Goalkeeper Podcast on all social media platforms. If you guys want to check out my tour schedule for stand-up comedy, it's MichaelMajidComedy.com, which is updated daily. And that is all the time on Inside the 18, and we are out. Later, guys. Hey everyone, it's Michael. Before we move on to our next segment, want to remind you all to please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. It literally takes 10 seconds and helps us out tremendously. More people can find us, which means we move up the rankings, which means more great content for you. Also want to let you know that this next segment was recorded prior to the pandemic at the United Soccer Coaches Convention. So some of the references might seem a little dated, but the information is so fantastic, we felt we needed to release it anyway. Thanks again for all the support, and on with the show. Welcome to Inside the 18, live from United Soccer Coaches Convention in Baltimore, Maryland, I guess it is. I guess Maryland is where we are right now. I'm Michael Magid. With me is Pro GK Academy's Omar Zini. What's
back.
Up, man?
Yeah,
he's
back.
He couldn't get enough.
No, we're back, and a little bit better circumstances than we had last year. Last year was incredibly loud. We were on the main floor. So this year we have our own podcast row, which is completely silent and separate from everything else.
Yeah.
So it's nice for us and editing purposes, I'm sure.
Dude, this is going to be incredible. And joining us is New York Red Bull's Jeremy Proud. Jeremy, thank you so much for doing this, dude. We're excited to have you here. Guys, remember, everybody out there who's not here in Maryland right now, we want to make sure that you guys are rating, reviewing, and subscribing. We're up to 130 reviews domestically, 135 worldwide. Omar, what is that in math? Times two?
Times two, that's 265.
Man, my gosh, look at that. That UC Davis education really paid off.
I thought you said you have 130 reviews and then 135 worldwide. So that means there's only five foreign?
No, that means 135 in the world as well, too.
You could have just said 130 domestic and five foreign, but...
Yeah. Well, no. So 130 reviews domestic and then 135 worldwide, as in worldwide, 135 other ones from places like Dubai and Hong Kong.
Wow.
Yeah, we get places that we actually have had people reach out and they go, can Omar do sessions in Dubai for me?
I have family out there, so I think I could probably do that.
Oh, let's make it happen. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about mentoring youth and developing youth. So I want to get into today's topic, and that's the Red Bull pipeline.
Seamless transition there, Mike.
Yeah.
He's very good.
I do what I can. It's almost like I've done 110 of these. Anyway, we're going to go into the Red Bull pipeline and New York goalkeeping in general. Honestly, Jeremy, is there something in the water in New York? Because it seems like pro after pro after pro after pro comes out of that whole area, that tri-state area. Let's talk about the Red Bull style of play, because there's a system, a Red Bull system around the world, apparently, that's been very successful. I mean, just watching Jesse Marsh's Salzburg's teams and the Leipzig teams and everything, is just, I mean, obviously what happens with New York Red Bull here, there's a specific style of play, and it seems a very aggressive and physical style, and it seems it's very demanding, especially on the field players here. So how are the goalkeepers involved in that, and what do you look to identify for that style of play? And what is the style of play, first off?
Well, I mean, yeah, the Red Bull playing philosophy is very high energy. They're looking to win the ball back and go to goal as quickly as possible. You know, part of it is they want to be very attacking on the front foot. You know, all of those things that, you know, can we win the ball back and go to goal? So how that relates to the goalkeeper, if we're in the, if our team is in the attacking half, okay, so now the goalkeeper is dealing with a lot of space. Okay, and one of the things that that I've been working a lot on is finding the best spots for the goalkeepers to be in certain areas. And when I was on the DFB course, I was talking to the director and I asked him a question: do you have specific areas you expect the goalkeeper to be when the ball is in certain areas? And he said yes and no. He said there's typically a minimum and maximum, and he used Manuel Neuer as an example. He said, well, he covers a lot of space, but he also has a pretty deep starting position, but because he sees it so well and he's so athletic, you know, he doesn't have to stand out so far. Does that make sense?
That's actually really interesting you say that, because when I think of Manuel Neuer, I think of playing outside of the 18.
Yeah.
So to think that he actually has a really deep starting position is actually very different, and that's something I didn't even recognize. Yeah, Omar, you were traveling quite a bit to play MLS Academy, weren't you?
I was. I mean, if I would have lived closer, it would have been easy. But I was driving like 45 minutes a session, so I mean, it was good. I mean, I enjoyed it. I felt like we were there three times a week, and it's like I had a specific goalkeeper trainer every single day.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is, you know, my coaching style is always based off of the coaches that I've had. And sometimes for better or for worse, like you probably heard this on the podcast before, but my goalkeeper coach at the academy level is very military based. So a lot of what we did is like, you guys, yeah.
You know who we're talking about, right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, you guys are going to do it my way, and that's how we're going to do it. And then every once in a while, he'd be like, let me put my arm around you. But by that point, I was just like, all right, dude, I'm afraid to even like get on your bad side. I remember one time I caught a cross in a game, and it was a good catch, but it wasn't how we trained it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, hey, Matt, like my bad. I should have caught it. I should have caught it at a higher point. He's like, no, you caught it. That's what I want to see. And I was like, oh, crap, okay.
Yeah.
And then I had my goalkeeper coach in college who was he had some days where he was a little aggressive, but for the most part, he understood my personality. And he was just like, yeah, I understand. Like, we can joke around off the field and, like, we get each other, but on the field, you're going to see a different me. And that's just going to be how it is. So I was used to the joking, and then we got to the field. I'm like, it's business.
Mm-hmm.
So, like you said, it is kind of like that nurturing and that relationship. And I think that's what differentiates different coaches is, like, that intention of effort. You know what I mean? It's like you can get through sessions and like, hey, how's your day? But not really care.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's the ability to say, hey, no, I really want to know. Like, tell me about your day. And then like they go, oh, crap. Like this actually, they value what I want to say. And then like when they actually, you offer them, hey, give me feedback of what you thought with the session. Then they want to give you more. And then that value of the relationship is like really, you know, heightened.
I mean, look, I mean, one thing is that, by the way, this is actually hilarious. Is like, it was reminding me of, I got a review. So one of the first reviews I got for my academy, for my LA Goalkeeping Academy, was Michael has an ability to bring the joy of humor to goalkeeping, which my son has never seen before. And I was like, is that a slap in the face? Is that a positive review? I'm not exactly sure how to take that or whatever, but I think there is something to be said that don't try to be somebody that you're not as a coach. Just always, for all the goalkeeper coaches out there listening, is bring yourself to the teaching, you know, because if you're comfortable in your own skin, if you're comfortable, the kids are going to be comfortable with you because they know you're not putting on a facade. This is not, you know, I'm trying to do the Jeremy Proud model of goalkeeping coaching, you know, or the Omar Zini coach. I'm going to be me and I'm going to do it my way. You know, we're still going to be clear, concise and direct and convey information in a way you understand it. But like, you know, just don't try to be something you're not. Like, it's okay if you're a silly, goofy person, you know, as long as you're focused and the kids are getting something out of it, you know?
Yeah, it's good to try new things. Like, I think I've definitely watched, like, other coaches in their sessions, and sometimes they're a little bit more, not aggressive, but, like, maybe because what they're doing is, like, a workshop, so they're always, you know, giving constant feedback. And then sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm reverting back to my old ways where I give constant feedback, and before you have time to let something kind of come in and absorb, the next thing is happening and I'm telling you again.
It's because you're so smart, dude. You're just so smart. You're just
no, but it. We do it. We've done it enough.
We all overcoach.
Yeah, but we've seen, I think we've seen so much. And like I'm saying, like, I think that's why I meant, again, a lot of my points will always come back to what I mean. So when I was talking to you about the different communication, it's like, you see these kids way more often than I would a private session. Mm-hmm. So for you, it's like you said, you get to know them and you say, okay, who can actually take in this information in stride and who am I going to have to be more patient with?
Yeah.
And do you feel like there are, like you said, there are certain goalkeepers who you're like, hey, maybe today is not the day that I say anything too negative or like, I'm going to save this, keep it in my back pocket and use it another time. So do you feel like that's, like you said, you change it up for every goalkeeper?
Yeah, I mean, I try, and this is something I've had to learn over the years. I was very much, when I first started coaching, this is how I was trained, and we're just going to do it this way. And, you know, there's early college days, there was kids that I lost. Like, they didn't love it the way they did when they came in. And some of them it resonated with, and they were all about it. They had that same mentality. So, you know, do you lose talent because your personality is overbearing for some kids? So
yeah.
I've had to learn how to make sure that I communicate effectively with the goalkeepers I'm working with. And we could be, it's like you do a session and we could be doing basic shot stopping, like the session we're going to do tomorrow. The technical points that the three of us, we could all be doing the same thing, but you could really need to work on your set. Maybe your body shape, and for me it's, well, I end up setting a little bit too close to the ball. Whatever it is, we could all be doing the same session, but what you need out of that session could be very different. And
yeah,
I think it's the same with when you're communicating with kids.
I want to talk about real so quickly, true. And then I want to talk about your session tomorrow as well too. But I want to talk about traditional club youth setting versus the academy setting? You know, we were talking about seriousness versus goofy and that sort of thing. Is the setting different at the academy than it is at a traditional youth club?
Yeah, I mean, there is, you know, at the MLS club, there's a high expectation that you're going to develop players to continue to progress and then hopefully get opportunities to move up to the professional level. And, you know, and how they get there, whether it's straight from high school or, you know, if they go from high school to MLS or they go high school to USL or, you know, the high school, then they got to spend a couple years in college or 4 years, and then they come back because they've been playing with our USL2 PDL, whatever the name is now.
It's so funny because how they're like USL2, it's like, yeah, it's PDL, it's it's still like, it's college hard, guys playing in that. The summertime, yeah. Like, let's be honest, it's,
you know, so
it's summer league.
Yeah, actually just lost my train of thought.
No, that's okay.
Like,
sorry.
Where did I go with that?
No, it's all good. Trust me, this is actually really straightforward. You should see us day four.
Yeah,
it's
I can't
be
really imagine what
oh
you guys are.
Oh, it's going to be like so.
To kind of build off that answer, I think it's a lot has to do with obviously the system, but I think the personality of the coach. Like, I think, you know, I've spoken to I say Phil all the time because I've spent the most time with him. But like, I asked him, like, you know, hey, who are your favorite coaches in like the industry? He'll tell me his favorite coaches and he'll just say, there's a reason why I'm saying it. It's because I can tell that there's a determination for them to like do the dirty work and do the work that's going to get their goalkeepers. Maybe not in 1 week, but in a month, that kind of like foresight of seeing, okay, this probably film session may not do anything for them today because maybe they're kind of like distraught from school or whatever, and they had a bad session or a bad game. But over the course of the month, I'm going to keep seeing it through, and this is what's going to get them to that point. So, like, I'm sure, like, for you, it's about just taking pride in your work, and I think that's the difference. Not that I'm saying that other coaches don't do it, but I think at like the high school or club level, whatever, sometimes it's difficult because they don't feel that connection with their goalkeepers because they're not with them every single day. So it's more of like, okay, I'm going to come in and do my session. See you later. Because you're not getting paid for that extra work.
Well, no, it's true. And in regards to the vertical integration, in regards to actually with the team, like at the club level, the traditional club, American club for you know, our listeners overseas, is you kind of go and you work with goalkeepers from all the different teams, the different age groups, and then you kind of go home. And, you know, a lot of them don't watch the games and they don't talk to the team coaches. So they're kind of really just doing glorified private sessions, really, is what they're doing.
Yeah, so I mean, it's critical that I have a relationship with the coaches as well, that we can give each other feedback, because I don't get to, as much as I'd love to, be involved in every single team session. That, you know, one guy, six teams, seven teams.
It's impossible,
you know,
yeah.
So, you know, I try to make sure that I take time each week, that I get time when they're with their team. So that's critical. Now, we have our 19s. They train in the day, so now I get to really make sure that how we're going to incorporate the goalkeepers into the team session, and those conversations happen well before training. What's it look like this week? All those kinds of things that we hope that could further the goalkeepers' development, because ultimately we want to get them in there, in the team environment, in the game environment, making good decisions. You know, it's for me, I always call it bridging the gap between the goalkeeper training and those game situations, and then how closely can we get that to what it might see in the game.
So let's talk a little bit about the session you're going to run tomorrow. What you were talking about, it's going to be angle play, and what is it, a setting in angle play? Is that what it is?
Yeah, so through the MLS and the DFB course Jack, Danny, and I went to with the other MLS Academy goalkeeper coaches. Since we were kind of in this area, they asked if we would be willing to do a session for the United Soccer Convention. So we're going to do a lecture portion, which is kind of just some insights into what it looks like in our environments. Danny's going to talk a little bit about the scouting. I'll talk about maybe what the training environment looks like, and then Jack is going to speak on what it's like, because he's now transitioning into Loudoun, what it's like to from the academy into the professional setting. So the field session will be on shot stopping. You know, we wanted to keep it relatively basic because it's not like we were together collaborating on it. So we had to kind of put it together as a group from afar and then, you know, come together. So It's going to be a basic shot stopping session that we're going to work on a little bit of angle play and how you can build it up. It from, you know, my portion is the warm up and the basic technique. Danny's going to do a little bit of situational, and then Jack's going to take it into a little game environment.
I love the fact that it's going to be a full progressive session.
Yeah.
With the realistic game environment at the end, which I think a lot of goalkeeper coaches out there need to listen to that. Every time you come to United Soccer Coaches and you see those sessions, they do in that progressive style, not because, you know, they want to look fancy and they want it to look cool. It's just because that's how you build up to the team dynamic, is to the actual game. I see so many goalkeeper sessions that are run, you know, or people see training sessions and they go, oh, you know, that looks really great, but I don't understand how that's working for the game in any way whatsoever. And that's one of the cool things about Omar's training sessions, is that they're still all game realistic, even when he's got all the bells and whistles going on with the cameras.
I try. I think that's like the willingness to allow sessions to fail. I mean, you can tell the guys, like I had a session a few days ago, and my man Armando and I got into a huge argument because he was like, I'm not getting anything out of this.
I thought there was a game that you guys got kicked off the field.
I put on my disclaimer, I put on the end of my video that there was we lost the field because of a permit issue. But it was because Armando and I got into an argument. And I think I told my brother, he was filming, and I told my brother, I was like, you know, when goalkeepers and coaches, like your boss or whatever it is, you get into an argument with people, like you got to hear them out. So I understood. I said, yeah, like, you know, maybe we weren't finishing on you the way we should have. And that's how sometimes the session doesn't go as well. But, you know, maybe next time, instead of asking my goalkeepers to do a one-touch finish, maybe do a two-touch finish, uh-huh, where you still get that live activation of your mirroring and tracking the ball. But now we actually get a touch. And even another coaching point there, you take a touch. Can you reconfigure your feet, or can you reset to see if maybe you can advance your position? So you can always work with them to find a way to make it game realistic, but at the same time, too, where they get more quality than quantity. And like I said, I think that's the development and like the maturity of a coach. I think, again, I would have never done that before because I want the session to look perfect. And again, my added element is that I film a lot. So my filming is like, what's going to look good on camera? And then I got to the point where I was like, no, screw that. Like, let's just keep it organic, and if it comes out well on camera, it comes out well.
I think there's a tough thing, even removing the camera aspect to it for goalkeeper coaches, and I think our egos kind of come into it sometimes, and we say, if the session is failing, then it's our fault.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
If it's breaking down, it's because we're not doing a good job coaching, when in reality, it might just be we need to make some adjustments here, or we need to let them figure it out.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times we don't let kids figure out an activity on their own. Like we go, oh, answer, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. We're going to have to stop this. We're going to have to do something else because they don't get it.
I would say as a coach, I've become much more comfortable with taking risk in trying a new session, knowing that it might not come out like, mm-hmm, how I have this vision of this perfect session. I always plan to make it great, but sometimes they're just not going to come out the way you envision them. But for me, we're always telling the kids to challenge and stretch themselves. As a coach, should I not do the same in how I develop exercises, that I have an objective? How can I maybe tweak it that it's going to put a little stress here or whatnot? And, you know, sometimes they're not going to be perfect, and that's okay. And I video every training session, and a lot of times it's and the kids get to see it. You know, I don't overwhelm them with the video. If it's there as a resource, if there's something glaring, we'll sit down and talk about it. It's same with game video. We'll go through that. But a lot of it is feedback for me. One, where am I standing? So am I getting the best vantage point? Am I looking at the right thing at the right time? So it gives me feedback on how I can become a better coach. Am I seeing the right moment at the right time? And am I actually coaching, you know, the right moments?
Dude, I love that. I never even thought about that before, but to use it as a tool, I mean, I feel like we need to put that little clip right there up for a bunch of goalkeeper coaches to hear that, because I think so many times when we're watching video, we're watching the players, and we're not thinking about, from a coaching aspect, what did we bring up that coaching point? So we're saying, basically, did you bring up that coaching point at the right time? Did we miss a moment there? Did I over-instruct here? All those sorts of things.
Yeah, there's that, and then, like, how much time in between exercise. Just things that have helped me, hopefully, become better. And then, obviously, I'm obviously looking at the goalkeepers. Are they getting better in these certain areas? But the video will give you a lot of feedback if you're looking for it. It's not like I'm going to the session, wow, he's not doing this right, he's not doing that right. It's like, okay, did I set up an environment for them to do it right?
Yeah. So
let's talk about service. Oh,
say one more thing.
Sure.
I think like, to build on that point is like perfect because I think that's the allow your goalkeepers to kind of like, it's just allowing, creating an environment and like a system there where it's okay to fail. And I think that's the biggest point that I've learned recently is, again, not overcoaching, but like filming the session and then let them mess up. I tell Armando all the time, I'm like, bro, I'm going to teach you or give you as much information as I possibly can from the videos that we've watched. But when you come into this session, go try and take that one point and try and, you know, put it into the training. But I'm not going to overemphasize it. And I don't want you to let your instinct be influenced.
Mm-hmm.
Let your instinct take over. Take that one or two pieces of information that we watched from the last session, take it into the session, and then see if it works. If it doesn't work, then don't worry about it. But at least you're trying to instill like these different little things to see if that can give you that 1, 2, 3, 5% better
to get you
make that save. And I think that's where I love the filming too, is that like there was a time too where I'm like, okay, I'm going to watch myself and see how often I talk. And like you said, what coaching points are you making in those moments? And I watched it and I'm like, oh my God, okay, well, when he does that, now I know what coaching point I need to make. And it's like not rehearsed, but now you have like something in your back pocket where you can say, maybe the next time they get that same shot, let's see what they do with it. And it's like that piece of information, you throw it at them and see how they process it. So that's the beauty of it. And I think that's the beauty of filming.
I want to talk about service with both you guys right here, because both you guys obviously give very good service. You know, you wouldn't be coaching where you're at if you weren't giving good service. You wouldn't be getting paid to do YouTube videos if you weren't giving good service. So, you know.
I thought you changed that up quick.
Well, I mean, what was
you wouldn't be doing this. And Omar,
I mean, I could have been like, and Omar, and you would be, and you wouldn't be training at Camp Shutout. No, but I want to talk about that because I think I know for myself, this is something I need to work on, is sometimes when I don't see the service, the right service from the kids, I freak out. So I want to ask you guys, because you guys pride yourselves on your service, what do you do in the situation when you don't feel the service is up to level? Do you guys step in and take the service? Do you guys change up the activity? Do you add a different variable? What do you do?
So there's specific times where I will do service if it's absolutely necessary. You know, the times when I had the opportunity to work with the first team, you got to make sure your service is on point, right? You're
Dude, do those guys? I've heard some stories about some pros when the service isn't right, they freak out.
Actually, they were great. Okay, you know, well,
I wasn't saying the Red Bull guys. I was just saying in general.
Like, maybe I put it on myself to make sure that I was like hitting my spots every single time. You know, so from that, I take a lot of pride in it. So maybe I put the pressure on myself. Who knows?
Yeah.
But for the kids, like the older guys, if they need a specific thing that I know that it might really be tough for them to deliver a type of ball, I might do that. For otherwise, the guy from IX, he made a great point. Every service is an opportunity to get better with your distribution, just how you place the ball, how you put it, and letting the kids figure out ways to serve it, and you know, driving through it. Whether this little ball is going to be, I'm setting up a dive, so I'm having the kid pass, like a firm pass. What, you know, so treating that every time that they have the ball at their feet, here, you can get better with your feet. Hit this spot, you know. So I might make modifications if, like, hey, just take a couple steps back, right? Step in a little bit closer. Little things like that.
Don't use your weak foot anymore.
Mike, is no, this still recording?
Yeah.
I absolutely say, okay, we're doing driven balls. Hit today, you're hitting them all with your weaker foot, and you know what, the ball's going to be all over the place. We're doing cutback training. Okay, if I have all right footed players, well, guess what, when they get on the left, they're going to be hitting with their left. And you know, it may not be as fast, it may not be as perfect, but it might pull out some other scenarios. Oh, a slower cutback, okay, one that's pulled further away from the goal. Little scenarios that, you know, maybe I didn't even think of.
That's a brilliant thing, and I don't even know if that's the direction you were going, but the slower cutback is, what if that was a player, a right-footed dominant player who had to cut back onto their left foot, and now dealing with that difference in timing is going to be completely different than if it was a left-footed dominant player. We're starting to run low on time here, because I know...
I'm just getting warmed up.
Oh, you're just getting warmed up. But no, dude, we can have you back in another time, dude. Trust me.
Can I add on to that?
Yeah, dude.
I think, it's a really good point. I think it's like, I watched this video, I forget who it was, but it was like one of the coaches, and they were saying that... like when the goalkeepers are complaining about the service, especially at a young age, It's like, no, in the game, it's not going to be always perfect. It's going to be sloppy. It's going to be a bad distribution. Of course, you know, you're not going to put somebody on volleys if they're not very good at volleys and it's the first activation of the day, because you want some, at least some continuity and some momentum and rhythm growing with the hands. But
who's not saying, good on volleys at the very beginning?
I think if you have like a kid that say, hey, like I want you to serve or something like that, like it can kind of screw up the session.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant a coach.
Oh, no. That's like the base.
I was really concerned. I was like, dude, what goalkeeper coach do you know? You can't hit a volley.
But no, yeah, I think that's the so what I'm trying to say is that, yeah, at a young age too, players need to understand that if a shot is like one step over to you, like you said, making the best out of a situation, if it's like slightly to your, not to your hand, slightly to the right, move your feet behind the ball. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It's like even a bad service is a good service. And I think that's the thing as a coach as well. When you have your goalkeeper serve, it's setting a realistic expectation. It's like, look, I know, like you said, preface it by saying, I know this is not going to be good. But at the end of the day, you're going to have to step into a professional environment and you're going to have to serve these balls at some point. So good start now. Mess up now. Would you rather mess up now? Or would you rather mess up and get embarrassed as a 25-year-old, 26-year-old goalkeeper who can't hit a volley, who can't hit a left-footed service, who can't hit a right-footed service on target, right timing? It's a skill.
I'm glad you're staring right at me while you're doing that.
I actually wouldn't tell him prior to that I don't expect this to be good. The expectation is going to be good, and then reinforce when they do it well. And if they don't, just, hey, next one,
yeah.
Okay? And then refocus the behavior to, okay, hey, just next time, just drive through with your laces. Whatever the situation dictates. But I think setting the expectation that they are going to do it well, I think is something that I think is important, you know, whether it's distribution or service or goalkeeping. And I always will tell them, I say, if you want good service, give good service. And I reinforce that. And I think it really tunes them into it. And then, you know, it continues to get better. And then you see it translate to the game where they feel more comfortable with hitting a certain type of ball.
Yeah.
So,
Jeremy, I have a question for you real quickly. You know, I mean, obviously it's a little bit of a loaded question because, you know, you coach at the collegiate level as well too. But what are your thoughts on the college game and for goalkeepers specifically? I know a lot of field players are bypassing college and going straight to the pro. They're going the homegrown route if they're of an elite level. You're obviously working in an academy professional structure now where you're trying to develop players for the first team. Where does the college game fit into the goalkeeping development system really today?
I think, you know, it's going to sound like I'm going to sit on the fence, and I kind of prefaced it earlier when we were talking about some of the kids. It's like, They don't mature soccer-wise, emotionally, socially, all at the same rate. So what is best for them? Are they so good that they're going to go in and play? Because ultimately, when we're talking about professional goalkeepers, they got to gain experience, whether it's the USL, MLS, that they need to play. You know, before the USL really took off and all of that, there was a lot of good goalkeepers that didn't play, and then when maybe the number one moved on or retired, okay, they were going to give this guy the opportunity, but really maybe he didn't have the game experience to win, because you know that you get to the pros, they're expecting to win games, get shutouts, make plays, you know. So for these kids, it's not one size fits all that you're gonna, this kid may go directly to the MLS. This kid may go into the USL. This kid might go to college 4 years, 5 years if he redshirts, and then he's been playing with us in the summer, so he gets to train with the 23s and Red Bull 2. You know, so it's,
so you guys have a decent amount of college guys training with you guys then in the summertime.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of guys that have come through the academy and other guys that are sprinkled in. You know, so it's a great opportunity for the kids to kind of reconnect with the club and, you know, get that summer, you know, involvement with Red Bull. So
yeah,
from that side of it, I think it's great. But back to your original point, I don't think that, you know, if you have a goalkeeper that's going to come in and get games and play, then absolutely. If that's the right thing for him, his family, then great. Go for it. If it's not, then you got to find how can we still, you know, develop this kid because we see him as a prospect. What is his best path?
I think Omar and I, we were talking about this yesterday, and we actually started joking about it because one of us made a comment that and started realizing that actually what they were saying actually was kind of the outlier as opposed to the norm, which was basically that, you know, it's very rare, and you only hear about the very elite, you know, we go, oh, so-and-so is playing, but they're 19 and they're 20 or whatever. But these are the outliers. Like, mm-hmm. in reality, David the majority,
Ochoa,
majority of professional goalkeepers, you know, are on the older ages that are getting consistent minutes. So you need to keep developing. You need to get better playing games, whether that's at the lower levels in USL 1, USL 2, and in college.
Yeah, well, like those guys, I mean, I love using the, like, basketball as a point of reference. I mean, you get guys like LeBron James who is just a physical specimen, and didn't have to go to college. Kobe Bryant. These guys can just step in. Their skill level is at such an advanced rate. They can seamlessly transition into the pro game. Obviously, they got to refine certain things and, you know, take care of certain stuff. But once they step into that environment, it's easy for them. And then you have guys like Steph Curry, Draymond Green, guys who went to college for 4 years. And they're having amazing careers because they needed that time to develop their game, develop their bodies, develop their mind, being able to, you know, work on, like, Draymond Green was a chubby guy in college, so he needed to work on
Draymond
his diet.
Draymond Green was a chubby guy in college?
You didn't know that?
I didn't know that.
He was hefty, yeah.
Because his last year's, like, he was pretty built.
Yeah, but. He was, like, heavy, like, fat heavy. Well, fat strong, whatever.
Okay.
But I think that's the importance, like you said, it's kind of being able to understand, have that awareness, and if the player doesn't have the awareness, whether the parents or the coach have the awareness to give them that kind of understanding of, look, your body may not be where it needs to be. I would suggest going to college, experience that for a year or two, see how that goes, put yourself in a good situation where you can probably get minutes and then get that experience. And then if you feel like at that point you want to step out or you want to continue, you can have the ability to do both. I think that's what a lot of kids were doing. We met, what's his name, from Oklahoma City?
Oh, Harrison Buma.
Harrison Buma. It's like, yeah, he was able to do the first team stuff, and then
with OKC,
he decided, hey, I might go to college instead, and I need to have more development. So it's being able to look to your coaches and look to your higher ups and say, hey, what do you think? And then it's our job to say, hey, look, you're good, but I don't think you're good enough yet to the pros. You can do this or this, but I would suggest maybe doing the one that's going to get you more playing time.
I just started doing the thing you do, you know, at your sessions when you see your other sessions just showing up. Where I'm like, oh, all right, well, all right, we're going to finish. We got to finish up right here because I just see so-and-so's about to start warming up over there. But he's good. He's texting right now. He's totally fine in his element over there. All right, we are going to start wrapping up right now. Jeremy, dude, first off, I mean, anytime you want to come on, man, we're always happy to have you anytime you want. If anyone out there, you know, wants to know more about Red Bull, the academy system, have any questions for you, I know you're now not against any NCAA restrictions, which is fun, so you don't have to worry about, you know, am I allowed to text at this moment and that sort of thing. So where's the best place for people to reach out to you?
They can reach out to me directly. It's jeremy.proud@newyorkredbulls.com.
Dude, you're just about to get 400.
That's okay. That's okay. It may take me some time to get back to you, but I will reply.
Dude, that's awesome.
I do have Twitter, but I actually only...